You're listening to The Profile.
Welcome to the Leadership Special, a show which features conversations with Christians in leadership about the topics that really matter. I'm Andy Peck, your host, and I've had the privilege of interviewing Christian leaders on over 1,000 shows, and so hope you'll enjoy this next conversation and will join us again next week. It's my joy to welcome you to another conversation designed to support and encourage Christians who lead. Back in 2021, Naomi Graham was my guest on the Leadership Show, sharing her vision of Growing Hope, a charity serving families with additional needs. She was the founder with others of the charity in 2017 with a clinic in King's Cross area of London. At the time, she had a vision to set up 20 clinics across the UK by 2030. She is now Naomi Fox, having married since then, and it's great to speak with her almost exactly 5 years later to ask how it's going and find out what she's learned about leadership. So lovely to chat with you, Naomi. Welcome back.
Thank you, Andy. Lovely to be here.
So perhaps you could just remind us of what Growing Hope is about for the those who are unaware of exactly what Growing Hope does.
Yeah, absolutely. So Growing Hope is a charity that champions accessibility and provides free therapy for children and young people with additional needs in partnership with churches all across the UK. So we do three things. We bring hope to children through the provision of free therapy services, whether that is occupational therapy, physio, speech language, music therapy, art therapy, counselling. We grow hope for families where hope has been lost through isolation or rejection. So really trying to reach families who are often pushed to the edges. And we share hope in Jesus because we believe he brings hope even in the most difficult situations. And that underpins everything that we are doing as an organisation.
So I mentioned that it was 5 years since we last spoke. I remember you sharing something of your vision at that point. So how are we doing 5 years later?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pleased to say really well, which is very exciting. We've opened lots more clinics and supported lots more people. So when we last spoke, we had two clinics open, and we now have eight open, and we have another one launching and then another one that's waiting for charity status. So our current clinics are in King's Cross, Broccoli, High Wycombe, Maidstone, Redbridge, Farnham, Solent, I feel like I'm going to miss one, and York. I think that's everywhere. And then we're just in the process of opening one in Tunbridge Wells, and we're waiting for one to be launched in Ipswich. So really exciting, and we've been able to spread across the UK, which is amazing. We have a pipeline for more in the future, and it means we've been able to work with over 1,600 children since the start. We've also trained 263 facilitators in our courses. So I think that's something we've developed since we spoke potentially. So we've designed two courses that support parents, carers and siblings of children with additional needs to run across the UK so that churches who want to get involved, who can't yet set up a clinic, can still support families in a very practical way through our two groups that we run.
Cool. We've used the phrase additional needs. I guess, thankfully, that's becoming more and more commonly understood, but just remind us of what additional needs includes in your definition.
Absolutely. So additional needs are wide ranging. So it could be a learning need, a physical need, a mental health need, an undiagnosed need, anything that is impacting on someone's ability to participate in activity. We want to be able to step in the gap and really support families with any of those needs.
Now you mentioned the word gap, and certainly a charity's activities are inevitably affected by the state's involvement in those issues or lack of involvement. We hear lots about waiting lists on the NHS, waiting lists for diagnoses of mental health conditions, support for children with additional needs. What is your experience on the ground? It's all very well reading about.
What do you find?
Yeah, so it is pretty challenging right now. It's one in five children, pretty much, slightly Shy of that, but one in five children in the education system have an additional need which is impacting their day-to-day activity. So there's a really high number of children who need support, and waiting lists currently are 1 to 2 years plus. I mean, often the children I speak to, I have families who say, oh, we've been given a diagnosis of autism for our son, and that's it. We don't have any follow-up therapy. We haven't been offered any kind of help. So we're really trying to bridge the gap for those families who just don't receive the support that they need. And there's a lot of communication at the moment in the news about the SEND changes, special educational needs and disabilities, and the government's about to publish a white paper about what they're going to do. But there's a kind of big fear for families that actually that's going to reduce support even more, which would be even more of a challenge.
Wow, yes. And in the last 5 years, has your role changed much?
Definitely. My role's changed a lot, I feel like. So I've been on maternity leave recently, and I've come back and I've changed my role to founder. So my focus now is as founder, looking at networking and strategic development, and my colleague is our CEO, who's absolutely brilliant. And I feel like I've had a massive leadership journey in these 5 years in terms of, what does it look like to run an organization and to be able to see that growth? I think for me, I've learned a lot about having to let go of things because you can't hold it all when you get to the size that we are. Our national team is now 14 or so people. We've got 8 clinics across the country. We've got lots of staff in those clinics because they become multidisciplinary. We've got lots of people we train across the UK. And I can't be involved in all of those different things. So I think a big learning curve for me has been around really trusting that God has gone ahead of me and that it's his vision and we're trying to do what he is leading us into, and that he's giving us the people and the resources at the right time for to enable that to happen.
I mean, it's one thing to have a vision, but another to have the finance and personnel to fulfill that vision. Post-COVID giving to charities, I did some research. In general, it's down in some cases by as much as 50%. Many charities have folded as a result. Why do you think Growing Hope has been able to continue to grow?
I think there are a few things. Firstly, I think it's because we're doing what we feel God's calling us to do, and I really firmly believe that God has provided in miraculous ways throughout this journey. And I've grown massively in my faith, not just in my leadership, throughout this journey in terms of being able to trust him when it seems like there isn't a way. There's that song that says, "You make a way when there is no way." And I think we often see God do that in incredible ways for us as an organisation. But I think also we've had some instrumental funding at particular points in our journey. Probably not long after I spoke to you, actually, we got some funding from Benefact Trust that gave us £86,000 a year for 3 years, quite near the beginning. And that enabled us to really basically do a step change in terms of being something quite small to becoming more of a national organisation. And again, we've had some incredible, significant donations from individuals or from various places that have enabled us to grow our team and expand our work at seemingly just the right moment. It feels like we're in another hinge moment now as we continue to grow our work. A lot of what we're trying to do is make sure that we're, providing these free therapy clinics and supporting as many families as we can, but also using our therapy expertise to be able to equip churches with accessibility training, accessibility awards, as well as enabling them to run our courses when dreams change and for parents and carers and siblings groups. And I feel like, so our recent news is that we've just had a grant from the Church of England, which is really exciting, that's enabling us to pilot a much more kind of targeted rollout of that accessibility training and awards. So we've had a pot of money specifically for that piece of work, which is encouraging.
Wow, excellent. Now, by training, you're a children's occupational therapist. So I'm pretty sure this didn't involve much training for leadership and management. And you mentioned you've been on a leadership journey. I'm just interested in the process of how you learn. Did you find yourself actually, I'm stuck and therefore I need some help from outside? Did you find that you needed to learn how to do it better yourself? What was the inputs into your learning? Just flesh it out for us, perhaps, Naomi.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, there were definitely moments where I was stuck and had to ask for some help, I would say. I've had some brilliant chairs of trustees across the years who've really helped as we've grown as an organisation, and they've all brought different wisdom and skills and experience. And then externally to that, I've done a lot of seeking out, great leaders or great coaches, or mentors who've been able to help me, and often, have met me for a month, once a month for 6 months, for example, across this journey, and have really inputted at kind of key times for us as an organisation. I was reflecting on what you are asking, thinking actually, I think a lot of my learning in terms of leadership, like you say, I didn't learn lots in my degree about how to lead, but I learned a lot through my church experience and through what I was doing. And actually, as a young person, people really invested in me and my leadership, and I am so grateful for that. I remember doing a growing leaders course when I was 17, and really learning lots. And now I look back and think, gosh, I really didn't know the first thing about leadership at that point. But since then, I've had the opportunity to support accessibility at New Wine conferences, to grow and develop my skills in lots of volunteer ways before leading an organization. And I think in my leading the organization, God's taught me so much around, yeah, a bit of what I was saying earlier around what does it look like to be able to hold tightly the vision that he has given me, but also trust it to him and let go of being able to hold it all, because I can't actually make every single thing happen in the size of organization we now have. And I think there's definitely been a lot of wise people along the way who've really helped me in that process of thinking, okay, what does it look like to maybe step back a bit in this situation, or hand responsibility to this one or person, or recruit somebody else, or, and the biggest change currently is obviously I've just become founder rather than CEO. I've handed over that CEO responsibility, and coming back in that position and thinking, gosh, this is very strange. I'm not having to hold that ultimate responsibility of all these different bits and pieces, and yet I want to bring value and continue to bring leadership to the team. And yeah, so that's been an interesting journey to go on.
Well, Naomi, you're a wonderful example of the kind of leadership that we seek to support and encourage on the show, namely people who see life as it is and think, actually, we don't want this to stay. We want to see things change. And then asking God about whether they can be instrumental in that change. And you've certainly brought those things wonderfully together. So that in itself, before you even that was leading
Yeah.
before you actually started even the charity, that having the vision to start with. And obviously then you've molded and put bolted stuff onto that as you've gone. So that's wonderful. For those listening, might be useful to paint a kind of picture. You've talked about eight clinics opening, maybe another couple on their way. What does it kind of look like? Is there a kind of a template, shall we say, of what the clinics look like, and how local churches might evolve. There might be some people listening thinking, hang on, we could be one of the clinics that make up the 20. So give us an idea of how it all works.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Andy. So each local clinic is its own charity, and it's a three-way partnership collaboration between the local charity, so Growing Hope King's Cross, which is, for example, the first one we set up, partnered with a church that is the host church, but also with more than one church. So churches in a local area kind of often coming together to be like, yeah, we want to do a Growing Hope here. And then with us as a national charity. And what we do as a national charity is provide quite a clear kind of structure and process and support so that the local Growing Hope charities can run. So we have various handbooks, and we do all the marketing, communications, and support with fundraising and those kind of things in order that the church really can be like, yeah, this is something we want to be doing to support people in our local communities. I think, when I think about the children that I see, I've had children come in the door who are really struggling with their sleep. For example, I've had an 11-year-old come in. She was really struggling with her sleep. Mum was like, "We don't know what to do. We're finding it really hard. None of us are sleeping." And we chatted through some strategies as an occupational therapist. I also offered to pray for them. We prayed about her sleep. I invited them along to some church things, but they came back a week later for their next session, and they walked in and they were like, "You wouldn't believe it. Like, she's sleeping. Like, our lives are so different. Like, our whole family is sleeping, and this is crazy." And I just think the privilege of being able to do that and to be able to share our faith. Majority of families who come into our clinics aren't Christian, don't have any experience of faith, haven't been in a church building. And yet, majority, we always offer prayer and we do that very carefully. But majority of people say, yes, they'd love prayer. And we get to speak hope over those children and families. And for me, that's the privilege. That's why we get to do what we do. And I think, the way that the model works is in that partnership with us as a national charity, so that the local church can be equipped to be able to set up this service. And then you start with any kind of health professional, as long as they're qualified and able to do their job professionally, and then you can build more therapists in. So a lot of our clinics offer multiple therapies at once, because we want to be able to build and grow that for that local community in that area.
So a local church would need volunteers, I guess, to be trustees, to financially, or at least to provide the backstop, as it were. Plus, you're looking for those with expertise in additional needs of some children's, particularly additional needs of some kind. Yeah.
Yeah, I think often what we find is that we have one or two passionate people who often become trustees, and like, actually, interestingly, they don't ever have financial liability, which is quite nice for
Oh,
them
okay.
because of the way the structure works.
Okay.
But so people who are trustees, and then we can recruit a therapist, a clinic manager, to start that clinic. So sometimes there's someone within the congregation or within that local area, sometimes there isn't, and we open up our recruitment. So if there are any therapists out there, we're always happy to hear from therapists who are Christians and want to be able to share their faith as part of their practice, because we're looking for therapists often in our work. But yeah, and the financial model is that we ask the churches to contribute, but we also give seed funding as a national charity, and then we support that local charity to be able to fundraise in order as they set up. So,
Sure.
yeah.
So, Naomi, the charity serves those with Christian faith, those with another faith, and those with no faith. How are you able to make the Christian side known without non-believers feeling awkward or feel like this is just a ruse to drag them into the church or something like that? So, talk about those sensitivities, if you would.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think and it's something that I'm asked lots. I once, when I was right at the beginning of Growing Hope, I went to a school meeting with Senko, and she sat there. I showed her our flyers, and I was like, "Here you go, this is who we are, this is what we do." And she was like, "Oh, I mean, could you just take this Jesus bit off the flyer?" And I was like, "I'm really sorry, no, I can't do that, because that's really core to who we are." I think the first thing is that we've just been really open about who we are and what we do and why we believe it. So, it's on our flyers, it's on our appointment letters, it's on our website, and our therapists talk about it, because Jesus really does underpin everything that we are doing as an organisation. I think what we've done is we've thought there very carefully about how do we explain that, and how do we bring that into the sessions in a way that doesn't make people feel uncomfortable, as you're saying. So we've thought that very carefully about how we offer prayer. So we always tell people that we're going to offer prayer. It says it in their appointment letters, but we explain it in a way that says, that we believe Jesus brings hope in people's lives. We'd love to pray for them if they'd like to, but there's no pressure if they don't want to pray. Is there anything they'd like to pray about? And by asking the question, "Is there anything we can pray about, or I can pray about?" it's very easy for someone to be like, "Oh, no, thanks." And that's the end of a conversation. We move on. Or for them to say, "Yeah, I'd love you to pray about this." But we thought about when we do it within a session, so that it doesn't feel like it's always at the end when we're reflecting on how the session's been, so it doesn't feel like it's impacting the kind of day-to-day aspect of the therapy that they're going to receive. And I think it's interesting. I think people notice the difference that we carry as Christians when we're in a space. You know, our values are around the hope that we have in Jesus, but also we have a value around community, which is about everyone being seen, heard, and able to belong. And I think there's something unique from our Christian perspective that we bring into the room when we say to a parent, like, "Hi, Sally, how are you doing? How was your day? How's your week been?" And we're really choosing as an organization to make sure we really, know people's names. We're really asking people how they are. And I think there's something in the way that we carry the value that God has over everybody into our therapy that can make a big difference to families as well.
And I'm not saying you shouldn't charge people for what you're doing, but is there a charge? How does it all work?
No, there's no charge. It's always free. And it's always free because we fundamentally believe that healthcare should be free for everybody, that, actually every child deserves the right to have a chance to flourish and not be stuck on a waiting list without the help that can make a big difference. What we do is we offer parents the opportunity to donate if they'd like to after the end of their sessions, after the end of their sessions. But generally, fundraising is through the local community surrounding that clinic, through local grant providers, and through local churches who enable it to happen, enable us to employ the therapists that give the support.
Right. So you've got roughly about 10 clinics to find in the next 4 years. So how optimistic are you? How do you feel about it?
I'm very optimistic. I think I really trust God with the vision and for the vision and the way it grows. We've got lots of churches already getting involved, lots more churches getting involved. I think we've really, the way that we've seen our courses expand to many, many churches across the UK and continue to grow, I think also just increases people's awareness of us. But actually, this year, what we're doing is we're exploring a slightly different model that will enable us to potentially set up more clinics in a just a more scalable and sustainable way. So that's our hope. My hope is that we can still hit our 20 by 2030 target and support lots of families across the UK by doing it that way.
Sure. Well, I appreciate it's in a sense a notional target. Who knows, you might get more than 20 into your course. So,
Exactly.
and so someone's listening and they're thinking, "Hey, I'm up for this. I know some people with additional needs or some children. What would be their next step? There must be a number of steps. There must be those who might want to benefit themselves and know where the clinics are. There might be those who want to set up a clinic and explore with you about their local church getting involved."
So best thing to do is go to our website, growinghope.org.uk, or to follow us on any kind of socials, or we're Growing Hope UK. So we're hopefully quite easy to find. But there are lots of things that we offer support-wise. So if you're a parent and carer in a clinic area, obviously, please refer your children. Anyone's welcome to do that. If you aren't in a clinic area, you can attend our parent training, which is free, run by our therapists on Zoom. Regularly, so you can find out information on our website. If you'd like to get involved in setting up a clinic or connecting in with our, we've got a Christian therapist forum. We've got a faith and healthcare conference coming up for Christians in healthcare. So you can find out information about those things on our website. If you're a church leader or want to set up a clinic or find out more about, running that support for parents, carers, and siblings in your local church through our courses, which are very low level, easy entrance, or through our training or accessibility award, all that information's also on our website. And of course, if anyone feels prompted to, then giving is also something that people can do. We are a charity and only exist because of God's amazing provision, but also people's generosity. So that's another way that people can get involved.
Well, fantastic. It's always a thrill to talk to people who at the very start of a ministry, and you were relatively early. I mean, 20 when you've been going 4 years, but you were started at the cusp of this, and to see how it's been flourishing. So fantastic to hear. So thank you, Naomi, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Andy.
It was lovely to chat with Naomi Fox, the founder of Growing Hope, a charity serving families with additional needs. So whether you're someone who knows families who have additional needs and need to connect with a clinic relatively close, or maybe online at Zoom, or maybe whether you're in a church which maybe has some capacity to set something up or to connect with Growing Hope, then do go to growinghope.org.uk and find out more. As I said in the conversation, it's always thrilling to talk to someone who's had that kind of vision, seen it develop, and now sees it established. And it may be that that'll be a inspiration to you as you listen to this, and perhaps have similar kind of inklings about what God may be leading you to do. As always, there's lots of conversations available for you by going to the Premier Dot Plus app or website. Type in the Leadership Show. The Leadership Show appears as a leadership special under the Profile podcast. I know it's a bit confusing, but we get a lot of downloads thanks to the Profile. So go to the Profile, and the Leadership Special will appear there every Wednesday, including this one in due course. You can go to your podcast provider, type in the Leadership Show or the previous name, the Leadership File, and you'll get many hundreds of former shows with topics and guests for you to gorge as you wish. So this is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company. Looking forward very much to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.